called Gdolim in War, the War in Gdolim. So I'm like breaking my head. What in the world am I going to do about this? And then, like always, Kosh Baruch Hu delivers. The most timely subject, and I refer not to the turkey, but the most timely subject is Hanukkah. They were Gdolim, and they fought a war. And that's forever after an inspiration for us. Because everyone here wants to be great. Everyone wants to be remembered as a great son, a great brother, a great father, a great Jew. But how do we do that? How do we, ordinary Joe, become a great person? How do we make that transition? And I think the answer is the story of Hanukkah. And I'm, with your permission, I just want to review the story. Even though we all know it, I'm going to go over the story of Hanukkah, which is 300 years before the Common Era, Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael in peace and prosperity, and we have a temple, and it's the center of our lives. And then the Greeks, led by Alexander the Great, rather modest name for himself, Alexander the Great comes, and he conquers the land, and he is benevolent. He doesn't force anything. But it's the beginning of eroding what was extraordinarily Jewish life. That was Alexander. He didn't force anything. But then comes Antiochus. And he has zero tolerance for Judaism and for Jews. And one thing after another gets forbidden and prohibited. And he wants to annihilate Judaism and God. And first they contaminate the temple. And they put inside pagan idols. And then Rosh Chodesh is verboten. And then Jewish ritual. And if you observe anything, it's instant death. And in a flash, Judaism is almost obsolete. But in these Judean hills, there's a group of Kohanim. And they say, hey, we can't allow this. We can't allow Judaism to be destroyed. But what are they going to do? Fight the mightiest army on earth? By the way, that's the answer. There's no other solution. So you have a bunch of enervated, diaphanous, weakling Kohanim. Bent over Yeshiva Bachram with dust on their hats. And they decide, listen here, there's no one else. And they coin the expression Maccabi. Mikamocha Beilim Hashem. That we have to do our part, and then we're going to let God do the rest. I mean, you couldn't make this up. Bunch of Yeshiva Bachram are going to take on the mightiest army on earth. Like, you would laugh, like three of you guys taking on a platoon of Marines. But this is much greater. And they're going to do it. Because there's no other choice. And we're going to, if we have to, we'll go down, but we're going to do all that God has commanded us to do. Our part, and let God worry about the rest. So they burned the proverbial boats. Do you know what that is referring to? I always remind myself not to use too many historical references. Remember that? Proverbial boats? If I think it was... his name just escaped. Montezuma. I think that was... Montezuma, when he conquered Mexico, so he told the soldiers, there's only one way. And he burned the boat so they couldn't go back. And so they saw they had no choice. So the Maccabim, they burned the proverbial boats. We're not going to do this Misyavnim shtick. We're not going to pretend we're Jews, not Jews, Greeks, not Greeks. We're not going to do that. We're going to take on the fight. They saw an injustice, they saw a tragedy, and they're going to do everything they could and let God worry about the rest. So day after day, and night after night, and month after month, they fight this incredible fight, and three years later, the impossible happens. And they're victorious. And they clear out the temple, and right away we got to light the light. And that's the story of Hanukkah. That's in a nutshell. And a bunch of Yeshiva Bachram defeat the greatest army on earth. And the fact of the matter is that greatness knocks on our door each and every day. And it's a response to just one thing, and that is challenge. We have all kinds of challenges. We're going to develop this in just a moment. What did you say? The Melchemes HaYetzer. That's the challenge. It's a challenge each and every day and each and every moment. and temptations and greed and desires and opportunities galore to do things we know that we should not do. To put our hand in that proverbial cookie jar, a lot of proverbials tonight, just because everybody else is doing it. So Hanukkah comes and teaches us the key and the secret. Greatness is how you choose to respond to your circumstances. And if I got an unfair deal, family, situation, how I'm going to respond, that's the key to my greatness. And mediocrity and complacency, they make you want to give up the fight. I saw him from Rabbi Dr. Shia Tversky, Dr. Abraham Tversky. Really nice insight. I don't remember if it was his own insight or he quoted someone. It says, "Bailot himalait al nafshecha al tabit acharecha." Flee for your soul, don't look behind you. Now, we ordinarily understand this to mean, if you look behind at that maelstrom of stone, you'll be caught in that conflagration. But he said differently. Al tabit acharecha, don't look behind you. Don't look at your past. Because that's going to get you down. I've been a jerk, and I did all kinds of irresponsible things, and I got friends, and I got yitzharas, and don't look at that. Look forward. And our mistake is we think if we fall down, then I blew it. I made a commitment. We all go through this Rosh Hashanah time. And look, hey, 2 months later, where are we? Falling down is not a mistake. Staying down is a mistake. A plane which flies from New York to Los Angeles, 85% of the route, it's off course. It's constantly, dynamically, perpetually being vectored back onto course. But the bottom line is it lands in the right runway, in the right airport, in the right city. It's 100% success. Falling down, we fall down, as long as you get back up. Otherwise, falling down is not a mistake. I work out in the gym where the workers, the guards, are Russian. And they're Hebrew challenged. So I was trying to go from the squash court to the pool without getting changed and dressed and going outside. And one of them caught me. He said to me, "Ata ta'ut," which translates, "You are a mistake." I'm still thinking about that. We're not a mistake. We can make mistakes. But greatness means when we keep on going. And we realize that we have a challenge. And the challenge is to be the greatest person that we can be. And that's why they're called Gedolim. Because they achieved the greatness that they could be. The story of Nosson C. Finkel. Amir Shiva passed away 1 year and three weeks ago. The all-American kid from a co-ed school and a co-ed camp, varsity basketball, came to Israel wearing a Chicago Cubs baseball cap and said, "I could make it in yeshiva." And became the greatest Rosh Yeshiva in the history of history with advanced Parkinson's. I mean, everything possible was going against him. He couldn't get a sentence out in Yiddish straight. And nothing stopped him. Even disease which would fell any other man. He saw that he could be all that he could be. And it's not the army that has the monopoly in that expression. Because if you believe in God, then anything is possible. When you steer down temptation, mi kamocha, I'm a Maccabee. I don't care. I don't care if the odds are great. I'm going to do all that I can do. And then I'm going to let God handle the rest. Okay. So the lesson of Hanukkah is to mimic the Maccabim, to be willing to fight for the Torah and that which is right and true, and the bravery and the courage to take on any challenge. That's a hard lesson to learn, especially when you get challenged every moment and every second of every day. Many years ago, the wife of this person is currently in this room, but years ago, my family and I were in America for the summer, and my kids went to a day camp, and one day, my daughter came back from day camp. Apparently, the counselor ran out of things to teach. The kid came home reciting the following poem. "I want to be a Maccabee, so brave and bold." In the middle of a recitation about bravery, courage, and heroism, she spotted a spider. Though I can't blame her, they say that cowardice is genetic. But those of us who aren't lion-hearted, those of us who don't have the Wizard of Oz to go to, where are we to go to get the courage of the Maccabim? That's the subject of our talk tonight. Where do we get that courage? To fight, the tiger within the tank. And the answer is, I think, from the most, not what I think, I know the most courageous act in Jewish history, which was, of course, never say of course unless everyone knows the answer, which was the most courageous act in Jewish history, rhymes with, sounds like, very good, but always with, don't get swell-headed. That is the most courageous act in Jewish history. Akedat Yitzchak. And it says regarding the Akedah, Va'ani v'hanar ne'lech ad ko, I and the boy are going to go to ko. Who knows what ko means? It means? There. Or?
Here.
Does it mean here or there? Hence, many people translate thither. That's the one word you never want to ask an Israeli to say, because they will say misparaim. They will say sizzle instead of thither. So, why, pray tell, is Avram waxing so bucolic and lyrical, we're going to go to ko, to thither, pray tell, as opposed to seemingly more appropriate, lamakom, sham, why sizzle, why thither? So says the Ger Rebbe, based on the Medrash, there's a hint here, and it's a profound hint. And the hint is, I and the boy are going to go to ko. We're going to go to Chafei. We're going to go to the 25th of Kislev. We're going to embed into Jewish genetics that courage and that fortitude and that bravery, that when we have a test, we're not going to buckle, we're going to stand up for it. And look at any chapter in Jewish history, and you're going to see a play out of that lesson. So the question is, where did Avram get his courage from? And the answer, I think, is a Medrash. The Medrash says that once there was this blood-curdling, pterotoid beast, mountain of a man, who stood at the crossroads, terrifying all the passers-by, and whenever a passerby would pass by, as passers-by are wont to do, he would terrify all the wayfarers. And wafer after wafer would go by. Sounds like a waffle commercial. And this bandit would call out, come here, come here. And the wafer would go over, and the bandit would unsheath his sword and smite him dead. Wafer after wafer. Waffle after waffle. So then the Medrash says, once there was a perspicacious, perspicuous, judicious, provident, erudite, clairvoyant, sagacious individual, pikeach echad, an intelligent person, who noticed that the bandit was a cripple and that he had no legs. So he walked all the way around him. And the bandit is shouting, come here, come here, come here. And this man walks all the way around him. There's tremendous profundity here. Who's that bandit? That bandit is the Yetzer Hara. That evil force within ourselves, which tempts us and frightens us and scares us and says there's no point. And we give up the fight and we let him smite us dead. And who was the smart man? That was Avram Avinu. And the take-home message is that no matter what is threatening, father-in-law, overdrawn bank account, or that bandit within his soul which always terrifies, we can walk around it. Who was the greatest general in American history? Are you from the South?
No.
Go ahead. If I'm not mistaken, actually, I'm not mistaken. Patton thought he was the greatest, but and he did a good PR, but he wasn't. The greatest general was George Washington. Now, who knows how many battles he won? I sort of set you up for this.
Many.
What?
Ran away a lot.
That's right. He won very few battles, a handful, maybe. Maybe. And he ran away a lot. Very profound. Said well. He was expert in, because you can do the proverbial win the battle and lose the war. And he knew he could stand up to the British and fight that battle and lose the war. So the more courageous thing to do was to avoid and to retreat and to retreat and to retreat until he finally had the opportunity to win a battle and then another battle. Now, it doesn't sound very macho, but the Yetzer Hara is older and wiser and more clever, and you don't stand a chance. It's not in the same basketball, it's not an even matchup. And the smartest thing you can do is just run away. Because the bandit has no legs. Listen to me. He has no legs. Think now. This is only going to work if you think of what it is that's tempting you. Be it the phone in the middle of shiur, or be it the TV, or be it the girlfriend. The bandit has no legs. Unless you go and turn it on, unless you go to her, they have no legs. They can't come to you. The bandit has no legs. You have to go to it, her, and you plug in whatever it is. But that bandit has no legs. And if you're a pikeach, you'll know to avoid it. That's strength. That's the story of our gedolim time and again. It's not a matter of macho and a Marlboro chin. It's just knowing what our strengths are and taking advantage. It could be that Avram is no more braver than we are. But he understood that the bandit has no legs. When Avram went to the Akedah with Yitzchok, so the Medrash says, a rushing stream came upon them, to their ankles, to their knees, to their thighs, to their waist, to their chest, to their neck. And Avram said, I'm going to continue. But bang my mud nafish. It's this high already. But I'm going to continue. And then what happened to the water? It dissipated. Because it wasn't truly real. Once you have the courage and the fortitude to take on the test itself is displaced. It's only an image. We're all acting on a stage, say Chazal, and God sets the scenery. But it's just paper mache. It's an image. Once you have the courage to take on this test, it's not so, it's just a Hollywood storefront, a facade. Says the Bach, what happened was the time of the Maccabim was Nisrashlu Min Havoda, which means they slackened off in their observance. So here's the rub. Now that the temple has been defiled, and now that Judaism is on the verge of extinction, and now that chips are down, are you still going to take Judaism for granted? And the Maccabim rose to that challenge. I hasten to mention to you, our mental image of the Maccabim is very distorted. Because how do we picture them? As Conan the Barbarian, and Attila the Hun, and Mighty Mouse, etc. But it says in Al-Nisan they were... There's a fill-in. It says in Al-Nisan they were... I mean, we've gone through this many a time before. 8 times a year. 3 times a day. Not counting benching. They were chaloshim. Enervated, diaphanous, weakly. They were not this... So muscle-bound they can't pick their nose as erect as an exclamation point with a wingspan of 14 feet in each direction. Bent over Yeshiva Bachrum with dust on their hats. Weaklings. But now the challenge is, I have a test. And Reis the Mesilas Yesharim, life is a test. And we have this test every day. Are going to have a sophomoric juvenile fit? Or are we going to act like a mature adult? And we have to wait an extra minute at the checkout counter, or call El Al and they put you on hold forever, or a student of mine told me a story that a boy took a girl out on a date after Pesach, and they came to a red light, and the girl removed the key from the ignition, and light turned green, light turned red, light turned green, light turned red, cars are honking, honking, honking. Finally, after 2 or 3 minutes, felt like an eternity at least, she reinserted the key and the guy said, just a test. Test the patience. And you passed. To which he said, and you failed. And he drove her home. So we have these tests all the time. Are you going to have a juvenile fit or act like an adult? You're going to go to lunch and take, when no one's looking, an extra piece at someone else's expense or damage a sheep of property and forget to report it? These are tests. integrity is the hardest thing, because especially when you go to yeshiva, because you can always rationalize the paying tuition. When I was a kid, I'm only 27, but a real nisayon used to have was, this will sound strange, but in public pay, you don't even know what it, you ever hear of a public payphone? Did your grandparents ever tell you that once there was, they used to call them one-armed bandits, you put in a quarter and you always, so it used to be a real nisayon was, you make a phone call from a public payphone, at the end of the call, the operator cuts on and says, ding-a-ling-ding-a-ling, please deposit 30 more cents. You don't see her, she doesn't see you, you can walk away. That was a real nisayon. So I remember I was once walking, got off in Grand Central Station in New York, walking up 42nd Street towards the library, the corner of Lexington and 42nd, where the buses go for the airport. There's a public payphone at the corner. Phone was ringing. I was a little kid. I still remember the way I answered the phone. Hello, Manhattan. And the operator got on and said, please deposit 45 more cents. And I felt so guilty, which is why it's not worth repeating the story, I almost deposited 45 more cents. But we have these trials all the time. You go to a restaurant. At the end of the meal, the waitress serves you a bill. You take a quick perusal, you realize she's erred arithmetically to your advantage. So what do you think? Well, this is where everybody gets Talmudic. Special wasn't very special. Service wasn't very good. Soup was burnt. And basically, at this lower price, they're getting the bargain of the deal. Which is why, when you have an nisayon, if you don't set up beforehand some kind of commitment, because I know there's going to be nisayonos, to make a commit. Reminds me of a story. Maybe some of you can relate to this. There's a frum lady who made a commitment to go on a diet, not tomorrow, but today. I know sooner she made the commitment to go on a diet, and she was driving down the road past the bakery, and there staring from the window was Napoleon, there's a cream cake, oozing custard. Knew, she said, must be bashert. Then again, I did make this commitment to go on a diet, but then again, God did arrange this fortuitous encounter between the Claire and myself. I know, I'll wait for a sign from above. I know, I'll find a parking space in front of the bakery that now knows meant for me to eat to Napoleon. And sure enough, on her 14th time around the block, she found a parking space in front of the bakery. So what do? We have a trial, and we know that we've had this trial before. There are so many nisyonos. I'll just give you. We want to be a mensch. We want to speak with their cheretz. We want to act with their cheretz. So you're in public transportation. You know that the menschlich thing to do is get up for someone who's older or weaker. I once got up on a bus for a woman that I thought was pregnant. When she told me she wasn't, I was so embarrassed. I said, I'm getting off anyways. I have to pay double car fare. Or, not a good example, maybe in Yerushalayim, but in Manhattan, where taxis at are premium. Also, to give up a cab for one who's older or weaker. And I'm in that second category of weaker. Because I'm always schlepping my books. And you can't just hail a taxi. You can't go, hey, taxi. Got a ring to it, hey, taxi. It doesn't stop where you hail it. It's got to weave over to the side of the road. So, you know, every story has two versions, except for this one. So I hail the taxi. And so it pulled over to say, it's mamash my taxi. So I hoist up the box of books, I'm running to the cab, and just as I'm running to it, a girl comes out of the building and goes straight into the taxi. Hey, I said, that's my cab. She said, that's life. That's what I'm trying to encourage you not to do. Not to cut a line. Even if you think your time is more important than someone else's time. It's an assignment. I'll give you a harder one. Now you may think I'm an old fuddy-duddy because I'm 27. But I didn't grow up with cell phones. But there has to be a time that we realize that a phone is not appropriate. I've been at funerals where a cell phone goes off. Now, I'm aware of the fact that sometimes you forget to turn off the phone. And by the way, at the funeral, it's always the jumpiest niggin that goes off, the monsters, you know. But what I'll never, and I'll never, I have two cautions. One is, not only does the phone go off, but the person takes the call. Okay, you forget to turn off. How do you take the call? So discussing the Shabbos table, my kid said it was probably a doctor. So I said, I don't think that 15-year-old girl is a doctor. And what I really don't get is, why is the second phone going off? Wasn't the first one a warning, turn off? And the second one also must be a doctor answering the phone. And why is it in public places, crowded public places like a bus or a restaurant, why do I have to hear all the gory details of your new diet or how cute your niece is? There has to be some kind of phone decorum. We have nisyonos, but the point is we can overcome them. It doesn't have to wait till Rosh Hashanah for a challenge to go overcome. I'm going to give you three or four examples. One is, this I heard from Rabbi Yisachar Friend. When we were kids, everybody spoke Lashon Hara. And nowadays, there's a whole new awareness. You might say this may be Lashon Hara, but, and then say it, but you don't just come out and say it. I distinctly remember second Seder in Yeshiva, there's a petrochemical layer, yay thick, malodorous, odorific, farstunken, redolent. Nowadays, if you smoke, you're a pariah. Out in the cold or in the heat. You watch a movie from the 70s on your neighbor's TV. Everybody's smoking. Those days are over. When I travel to America, which I do often, my host in Brooklyn, his name is Pashkes, very sweet man, Mr. Pashkes, manufactures candy. And his key clientele are Hasidim. And if you look at the wrapper of a Pashkes candy, there are more Hechsherim than there are ingredients. With no connection. No Shatnes, no Gezelsman, no Kimlai Bedrabimine, no Palginin Dibura, no Shatnes. And Mr. Pashkes told me, he's a couple years older than I am, that when he was a kid, if you didn't see a picture of a P.I.G. on a candy bar, you ate it. Those days are over. You don't just put something in your mouth. You check the ingredients. You look for Heksher. My last example is Oskar Schindler was a dishonest businessman, a womanizer, and he saved the lives of 1,100 Jews during the war. Had it not been for the latter, if he would be remembered, and that's a major if, it would be as a creep. And now the name Schindler is synonymous with heroism, bravery, self-sacrifice, courage, synonymous. Like Vaseline means petroleum jelly, and Kleenex means tissues, and Q-tips means cotton swabs, and Band-Aids means Band-Aids. Schindler means self-sacrifice. He changed who he was, and we can too. We have Nisyonos. And that's the incredible inspiration of the Maccabim. That even if the chips are down, and I have the Yetzer Hara, and I have all kinds of girlfriends and all kinds of problems, but nonetheless, I'm not condemned. It's a challenge. And they had a challenge and achieved greatness, and we can as well. I'm going to end by telling you a story, which you might have read in high school, called The 51st Dragon by Hayward Brown. Remember that? Good old literate boys. It goes like this. Once upon a time, there was a knight in shining armor that was irritated at all these damsels in distress were being devoured by dragons. He went to the local wizard, "What shall I do?" And the wizard said, "No problem. Just recite this incantation, and poof, the dragons will disappear." So the knight goes out, dragons approach, and he recites the incantation, and the dragons disappear. One dragon, seven dragons, 19 dragons, 28 dragons, 34 dragons, 42 dragons, 48 dragons, 49 dragons, 50 dragons. Comes the 51st dragon. And the knight forgets the incantation, and the dragon gobbles him up. That's the whole story, but... I just remembered a story that... there was a Israeli and a Czech walking in the forest, and out of nowhere came this bear, and he devoured the Czech. And so the Israeli ran to the foresters to the ranger. I was walking in the forest. Out of nowhere came this bear. He swallowed the Czech. I looked very carefully. He didn't chew him. He just swallowed him. Maybe you can save him. So the foresters ran out. There were two bears. There was a female bear and a male bear. I said, "Which one ate him?"
They pointed to the mail, sliced them open. There's nothing there. From which you learn, never trust an Israeli. He says the check is in the mail. Now, what would happen if we would retell the story of the 51st dragon as a Hasidic Shemaisa? Go like this. Once upon a soul, there's a Hasidic knight called the Knecht who was upset that all the Beis Yaakov Meidlach are being devoured by dragons. He went to Rabbi David, "What shall I do?" And Rabbi David said, "No problem, no problem. You say this bracha will be as easy as slicing kishka." The Knecht goes out, dragon approaches, puts on his gartel, and he says the bracha. And the dragon disappears. And 1 dragon, 6 dragons, and 9 dragons, 14 dragons, 28 dragons, 31 dragons, 37 dragons, 42 dragons, 46 dragons, 49 dragons, 50 dragons, comes the 51st dragon. And the Knecht forgets the bracha. Dragon gets closer and closer and closer. And then Rabbi David, who's a lot smarter than any medieval wizard, mental telepathy is to connect to Shlemiel. "You're a Jew, did you forget? We don't believe in dragons." And the dragon disappears. Because he wasn't truly real. Once you have the courage and the fortitude to take on the test itself is diminished. It's only in the Nisayon. Reis Mesil Sharm, life is a test. And what we learn is that once you take on the test, no matter how great it is, God doesn't give us a test unless we can overcome it. Now you would think you've got to be kidding. A bunch of weakling yeshiva bachrim taking on the mightiest army on earth. But it happened. And that's what we're about to celebrate. That's a lot of light, which can dispel a lot of darkness. Okay, I'm going to mention that I have brought a few books, and maybe someone will go into the car and get a few more. I have a Hanukkah sale every year, which means I sell everything, buy now, pay later. And I have someone here who can collect from you. I take off 70%, which make for my discount. And if you buy 2 items, the 3rd one is free. So if you're interested, see me. If you're not interested, see me also.